Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Haha! Suck at other podcasts! They picked me to play! Before we continue my first ever journey through the Harry Potter series, just a few quick announcements. First, wanted to give a reminder that for the April 29th episode, 1 week from today, it is going to be a bonus episode of Potterless because I will be in Italy and I will not have the ability or the time to make a full episode. It will be the Harry Potter debate that Lauren Shippen and I had as part of the Multitude live show in Seattle. It's very funny. I'm very proud of it. I think you'll enjoy it too. It just makes sense for me to take a break here. I've never taken a break and I'm going to be out of the country, so I think it's all going to work out. I hope you understand. Also, a friendly reminder that you can see me and the Multitude crew live in Nashville, Tennessee for Pod X. If you go to multitude.production/live, you can see all the information there, but we're going to be doing stuff at the convention. We'll do a meetup as well. It'll be a whole fun time. And if you don't know what Multitude is, it's an audio collective that I am a part of. Multitude is all centered around shows of people nerding out about the things that they love, which sometimes means being critical of them, and that's okay. You've got Potterless, you've got Spirits, you've got Horse, you've got Waystation, and you've got Join the Party. A wonderful lineup of shows that are great to listen to, especially if you're all caught up on Potterless and Potterless bonus episodes and you need something to pass the time. All of the information on those shows is at multitude.productions. And speaking of wonderful things and wonderful people, we have new patrons to welcome to the team. So shout out to Jaleesa Jackson, Juliana Ruelas, Megan, Katie Firth, Jamie D'Andrea, Allie Parker, Masters of Nothing, Shardai Jutila, Jen McGinnis, Cindy Lowe, Elad Peretz, and Abby T. Shout out to Grady Hollister, who upgraded their pledge, and a huge shout out to our newest producer level patrons, Kafir Shaltiel, Lindy Packy, Martha Madueno, Benjamin Desmond, Tahinder Cumber, and SkyMart6. They join the ranks of Leanne, Vicky, Aaron, Jesse, Natalie, Deborah, Clow, Frank, Marchismo, Tori, Samantha, Juan, Kieran, Rebecca, Abid, Caitlin, Rosemary, Jill, Marie, Lisa, Ariel, Romina, Kamel, Russell, Dustin, Audra, Eleanor, Sydney, Billy, Rossanne, Andrea, Nikita, Lala, Chelsea, Taylor, Lovekesh, Ali, Cassandra, Roxy, Amelia, Sean, Sarah, Ben, Rachel, Zachary, Jessica, Arna, Tiago, Daisy, Jessica, Orchid, Steve, Vivian, Takari, Haley, Marino, Moster, Pinky, Angelina, Russ, Marie, Lee, Alex, Brian, Caitlin, Finn, Mosin, Grace, Sammy, Raul, Ingen, Mari, Brianne, Alexandra, John, Jen, Noel, Tao, Emily, Michael, Robin, Patricia, Will, Liz, Mariah, Brandon, Sarah, Claire, Teal, Sina, Rory, Gloria, Sarah, Patrick, Alicat, Hallie, Veronica, Kevin, Lada, Noah, Tracy, Lucinda, Carlos, Pam, Nikki, Colleen, Jennifer, Friede, Ivor, Naomi, Tyler, Summer, Heather, Vera, Kerry, Andrea, Topher, Ella, Anthony, Dead Cat Lady, David, Elisa, Lynn, Emily, Ryan, Cameron, Justin, Christine, Jacob, Toothless, Maya, Mark, Polly, Kimberly, Srujan, Brittany, Nita, Bavi, Tumnus, Remy, Matt, Sarah, Lauren, Nona, Kyle, Zina, Emily, Colleen, Harlan, Akanksha, Wouter, Shelby, Noelia, Reese, Adriana, Brian, Akamib, Washin, Jenny, Nikki, Kara, Dorcas, Courtney, Kine, Amanda, Sabrina, Lauren, Claire, Alicia, and Can't I Potter? Who never accidentally tip over their water bottle all over their desk right after filling it up. If you want to be like one of these amazing patrons and get access to bonus episodes, director's commentary, my notes, discounts on the merch, exclusive merch, you can go to patreon.com/potterless. But without further ado, let's get into episode 74 of Potterless, covering chapter 23 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, guest starring Helen Zaltzman and Martin Austwick. Hello, Internet, and welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a grown man reading the Harry Potter series for the very first time. My name is Mike Schubert. I am that grown man, and I am here joined by two lovely folks from across the pond that I met north of the border in Canada, so it's a whole whirlwind of meetings. It's Helen Zaltzman from The Illusionist and Martin Austwick from Song by Song. Helen and Martin, how's it going?
Hi.
Great.
It goes well. How do you do?
We have terrible jet lag.
Oh.
Because we just landed in the United States, so we're really going to bring the energy today.
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, I didn't get a lot of sleep last night because I posted an episode of Potterless, so we're all just ready to go.
Perfect. Maybe we should just take a nap instead.
Oh, well, yeah, we could do that. Or we could talk about this very dramatic and action-packed set of chapters of Harry Potter.
Yeah, shit's really kicking off.
Yeah, I knew that it was going to be serious when the chapter title was Malfoy Manor. I was like, ooh, this will be fun.
That is a light spoiler, isn't it, for the chapter?
Yeah, a little bit.
You don't know at the beginning why it's called that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but I obviously knew they were going to make their way to Malfoy Manor. I have said this so many times on the podcast, but I don't like when the title of the chapter or the little picture gives anything away.
Yeah, right.
I wish they were just called like chapter 23. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. I don't want to know anything.
The case of the mysterious apprehension.
Yeah, or just like really vague things.
But like apples and oranges.
Yeah. Before we begin, what Harry Potter houses do you two fall into?
I think I'm a Ravenclaw.
Okay, I could see it.
Yeah, because I grew up with an emphasis on academics.
Mm-hmm.
I think Martin and I disagree over which house he would be in.
Which do you think I'm? Which do you think I am?
I think you're a Hufflepuff.
That's nice.
Because you're a very sweet dork.
The long pause by "that's nice" is a great reaction.
No, I'm just trying to pass that. Like, is that vaguely... I mean, I guess none of the houses are designed to be vaguely insulting, I suppose.
No one wants to be a Hufflepuff, though, because the least cool house.
It depends.
Well, that's true.
Depends, because I feel like in the books, they are written not cool and they're just dunked on all the time. But in real life, it's just like the loyal people. Like, they're the good friends. Mm. I find it similar to Slytherin, where like in the books, it's like, the racists. In real life, you'd be like, oh, they're ambitious and cunning. So I always try to think of it as not going by the books, because like name four Ravenclaws. Like, I can't think of anybody that is not.
Cho Chang a Ravenclaw?
She is, as is Luna.
Ew.
And then I know Roger Davies, and then it stops there. Maybe one of the Patils, but that's, I don't know if I could hit double digits of Ravenclaws.
No, they don't. They don't really concentrate on the two non-evil and non-heroic houses.
Mm-hmm.
But I reckon Hufflepuff is the house where a lot of them grow up to be your favorite friend with benefits. They have that kind
We're
of
married.
They have that kind of cheerful spirit.
What are you saying?
I'm trying to think of nice things to say about Hufflepuffs, who are all like kind of stupid dorks.
So what do you think I think I am?
I think you think you're a Gryffindor.
No, I'm not brave enough to be a Gryffindor.
Okay, you're a Hufflepuff then.
I think you think you're a Slytherin would be my guess, but I also would peg you as a Hufflepuff.
No way is Martin a Slytherin.
I do not identify as a Slytherin.
Oh, so Ravenclaw as well?
Martin is a very innocent at heart person, but I don't think he's kind of unemotional and mean enough to be a Ravenclaw.
Are they very bookish, Ravenclaws?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I always don't
No, you're an absolute Hufflepuff, mate.
I'm pretty bookish. I do have a PhD in physics.
Yeah, but you're too much of a dork to be a Ravenclaw.
Okay.
But you need to be a bit more haughty to be a Ravenclaw.
Okay.
No shame
in
it.
Now that we've had this sorting hat ceremony, let's talk about chapter 23, which is called Malfoy Manor. So it starts off with a bang in that the Death Eaters just start mugging a bunch of children.
Sounds cool, guys.
It's really on brand for the Death Eaters, isn't it?
Yeah.
By this point.
Definitely.
I don't think there's anyone on the fence at this point in the story.
No, nobody's like, are those Death Eaters?
Are those Death Eaters nice?
Let's just give them the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have that cool tattoo, you know?
Well, that's
true. And they've got the pointed hoods.
Yeah, and they also got muscle. They've got some pretty snazzy spells.
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
Yeah, if you're going by the movies, they have those really nicely done arts and crafts masks, which are very cute.
Yeah, they could be in Korn or something. Is it Korn that wear the masks or Slipknot?
I think you're thinking of Insane Clown Posse, aren't you?
Slipknot, I believe, are the masks.
They could be in a kind of Wizarding World Jabberwockies.
Ooh, so the Death Eaters are a dance crew. That's canon now.
A dance crew that will occasionally kill you. But they're kind of a bit pathetic in this chapter, aren't they? Because they are bullying and capturing children, but the kind of mean one is unable to call Voldemort because he's not high enough in the ranks.
He's not a proper Death Eater.
And the rest, like the Malfoys, their house has been overrun by douchebags.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
they seem pretty irritated. Oh, we're kind of skipping ahead a bit, aren't we?
Yeah,
yeah. We'll get there. But they do come off very poorly in this chapter.
Yeah, the Death Eaters they're powerful in this chapter, but in a kind of pathetic way.
Mm-hmm.
Carry on.
So they start mugging the kids. Harry's new wand gets stolen. Ron yells, get off her, while he is getting punched. Hermione yells, leave him alone, while Ron is getting punched. And it all started with, once the Death Eaters were starting to mug them, Hermione points her wand at Harry. Yeah. And I was very confused about why she did this. But we later learn that she did some sort of stinging spell to his face so that he would be disfigured. Which, I love that we live in this world later in the chapter where it's like, oh no, his face is kind of puffy. Is that Harry Potter? Like, I don't know what this spell did to make him not look like the same human, but it's pretty impressive work.
His face is pretty swollen, isn't it? I mean, I kind of imagine,
mm-hmm.
yeah, like he'd be been stung by like killer wasps or something like that.
It's very resourceful of her, I think.
It's a good tactic.
I also like the fact that it's kind of fucking over Harry a bit.
It's also mostly ineffective and makes almost no difference to the evolution of this chapter, right?
It puts him in another uncomfortable position. Yes. He has a very painful time in this. She could have just magicked a kind of mask over his face, or like grow his hair over his face in a kind of 90s indie band style.
I love the fact that this is going to escalate at some point. It's just going to go, Harry, I'm going to kick you in the nuts, but why?
Magic!
No, it'll be good. It'll confuse people.
It'll work. Your voice will sound different.
Yeah, exactly. Your voice will go way higher.
Because werewolves recognize people by the nuts.
So speaking of werewolves, Fenrir is being weird again, where he really keeps on talking and talking about eating children, which not a great look. But then he goes inside the tent and he laughs and calls Harry ugly and asks what happened to you. And that's when I realize, oh, Hermione disfigured him. Mm. So Fenrir asks what his name is and he says Dudley. And then Fenrir goes, and your first name? And then Harry goes, Vernon. And as someone that I've accidentally called the Dursleys the Dudleys very often on the podcast, I feel vindicated by Dudley now being his last name.
Oh, right, yeah.
But Vernon Dudley is his choice of name, which is great.
So in your imagination, Dudley Dursley is Dudley Dudley.
Just, it's one of those things where, like, I mess up saying the Dudleys instead of the Dursleys. And I also, and this, I don't really know exactly why, but I will often interchange Voldemort and Dumbledore when I'm saying them.
Wow.
I guess they're both, like, three-syllable powerful wizards, but there have been multiple episodes of Potterless where, while I'm editing, I have to plug my microphone in and everything because I'd be like, yeah, and then Dumbledore kills a guy. And I'm like, well, oh, crap, no, he doesn't.
I feel like he, who must not be named, being the headmaster of a school would be really awkward.
I don't know, a lot of headmasters of boarding schools are historically quite sadistic people.
Yeah.
Or do you think that Dumbledore and Voldemort, it's a kind of Tyler Durden situation?
Have you ever seen Dumbledore and Voldemort in the same room?
So, I mean, a few times, yeah.
Dumbledore.
Yes. Yeah, actually, yes.
Dumbledore punching his own face.
So, Greyback tells a new Death Eater named Scabier, which is a fun name.
Scabier than what?
So, he checks the list for Harry's fake name. Then they ask Ron what his name is. And he says Stan Shunpike, which is a very poor decision, given that Stan Shunpike has been brought up to Ron multiple times as someone in cahoots with the Death Eaters. Not a great improv bit from Ron Weasley here.
But Ron is a dipshit at the least stressful of times. He's not going to make smart decisions in this case.
Yeah, it is funny that he either is brilliant or not bright at all when it comes down to pressure. And later on in this chapter, he does great things while under pressure, but this is not his best moment.
No. But fair play, I don't think I would be smart either.
Mm-mm. That's the thing, is especially at 17, I would have been freaking out. I could not have come up with good lies.
I'm trying to think of any good decision I made at 17.
Mm. The list is short.
And also, I wasn't a 17-year-old with PTSD, as pretty much every character in Harry Potter would have.
Yeah.
They've seen awful things.
Do you either have a go-to fake name for this sort of situation?
None. No. I had not prepared at all for this situation of being captured by a Death Eater werewolf.
I would have to make up a last name really quickly, but my go-to fake name at a restaurant or someplace, because I'm Mike, so it'll be very often where there'll be multiple Mikes ordering something. My go-to fake names will either be Steve or Winston if I'm feeling spicy.
Steve is also quite a common name.
That's the problem. I usually go with Winston because I'm like, no one else will be Winston. But the one time being Mike helped me was I was at a pizza place and it was like a order by the slice thing. And the guy in front of me was named Mike and he ordered the same thing as me.
Whoa.
But then they said Mike and I stood up and the dude handed it to me and I was like, haha, I have skipped one person in line.
Yes. Mike power.
Yeah, the one time it comes in handy.
Hey, cool story, past Mike, except you ruined the entire thing by telling it wrong. Hey, how's it going? Editing Mike here. What past Mike meant to say is that the person in front of him ordered a sausage pizza and gave the name Mike. Now, past Mike was going to order the same thing, so he didn't want there to be confusion, so he gave the fake name of Winston and then ordered the same thing, a sausage pizza. When it came time for them to bring out the pizza, even though me and this other Mike got the same order, they brought out mine, Winston's, first. Thus, Mike's whole story here was incorrect. However, I did get that pizza first that one time, even though I didn't deserve it. I like to think it's because I came up with such a fun fake name, so I'm proud of myself.
Actually, do you ever have that in Harry Potter? Because surely, since most of the kids have fairly standard white Brit names at the school. Are there any who've got the same name as each other? So there's like Dean F and Dean P.
That is probably the most unrealistic thing about the Harry Potter universe. There are no two kids with the same name.
I mean, I still think whatever you think about J.K. Rowling's writing style, if she had two characters with the same name, that would be quite shitty writing.
No, but they would be called like Mike S and Mike T. Right?
Mm-hmm. Or one could go by Mike and one would go by Michael. Or the true story of anyone whose first name is Michael, you go by some sort of nickname variation of your last name.
Yeah. That would get confusing.
Like Shubes.
Or like Big Mike or something like that, right?
Yeah, just throw an adjective on there.
Yeah, doesn't matter if it fits.
Puff or Puff Mike.
That would be the way that you probably have to distinguish it in Hogwarts. You'd be like, Ravenclaw Tom? No, Slytherin Tom. Oh, racist Tom. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the Tom that accidentally turned the teacher into a frog. Oh, yeah, that Tom.
So Ron then says that his name is Barney Weasley, which at first I thought was not a smart idea, but then I realized is actually a very smart idea, because then he's insinuating that he's a pureblood, so they won't want to capture him.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Pureblood privilege.
So then they ask Hermione, and she says Penelope Clearwater, which is a great throwback, because that was Percy Weasley's girlfriend for like a day in book two.
Wow.
This chapter in particular has so many throwbacks to characters from way back.
Yeah. That's good thinking from Hermione. We expect Hermione to kind of keep her shit together in this sort of situation, don't you?
She's the only one you can trust with anything for sure. So the two Death Eaters think that they look like they should be Hogwarts students, and Ron says that they left. The Death Eaters ask why they used Voldemort's name, because the Order likes to use it, and Ron says, it was a mistake, and we don't know what the Order of the Phoenix means. The Death Eaters, though, still decide to throw them in with the other prisoners. Those prisoners are Dean Thomas and the Goblin, which we heard about in the radio broadcast from last chapter.
Sorry, we're at a friend's house, and someone in an adjacent room has just flushed a toilet, so you probably want to drop the level on that when we send this
to. Well, I'll keep it in now. If anything, I'll amplify it, and everyone can hear how good the flush was.
Hey, how's it going? Editing Mike here, just to play that amplified flush noise for you. Ah, so soothing. Anyway, back to the podcast.
It sounds fine.
So, Harry says, this is all my fault. I said the Dark Lord's name. Well, yeah, no shit, Harry.
Harry is often fucking up. Mm-hmm. I get that he has a lot on his plate, and he's probably very tired after the events preceding this in the book. He's been camping a long time. Everyone knows you don't get a good quality of sleep.
True.
But he
is one of those people that likes camping, though. They do exist.
Maybe. But he is always fucking up, and someone like Hermione kind of gets him out of it.
Yeah. Mm. Especially in this book, I feel like he's making a lot of mistakes. Like, he's like, oh yeah, Bathilda Bagshot, let's see her. Oh, a snake is coming out of her neck. Ah, I've chosen poorly.
No!
Foiled again by a giant snake.
But then on the other hand, he is a child. Mm-hmm. And that, children are often, they're not, maybe not expecting snakes to come out of old women.
True. We all make dumb decisions when we're younger. I had a bowl cut in high school. We've all been.
It was character building.
I can't imagine that.
So when Scabier tells Greyback that Vernon's name isn't on the list, he starts to interrogate Harry. He asks what his house is. He says Slytherin. He's like, oh, everyone says that. Where's the common room? And then Harry nails it. Here's my thought. Wouldn't anyone at Hogwarts know where the common room is? Like, that doesn't seem like a particularly hard question to ask.
Is it a secret?
They do mix with each other.
Yeah, there's only four. Yeah. Why are those kids walking towards the lake?
Maybe Slytherins really like swimming.
God, the Slytherin common room must really smell of damp.
Mm-hmm. I need to see like an architectural drawing of Hogwarts because it seems very silly to put a common room underneath the lake purely for a dramatic effect.
Just to be so goth.
We're so different and brooding and moody. We're under the lake.
we're so dungeon.
What if someone got put into Slytherin just because they wanted to be a marine biologist?
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm not racist. I just like fish.
What if someone's like just super, I don't know, like who would be a Slytherin that wouldn't be into that stuff? Like maybe someone who's like super ambitious, super cutthroat, super corporate. And they're like, why are we hanging out in this really gothy place?
Yeah.
I was expecting this to be like Miami.
It's like an investment banker gets put in Slytherin. Exactly. It's like, what am I doing here? I just want to work crazy hours and then drink a lot.
Yeah, or someone who is really good at magic but doesn't have a sort of Gryffindor personality. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that they're an evil twat.
That is the fan fiction or spinoff book that I want to see. Just like a normal person in Slytherin that is like, what is wrong with all these kids picking on people all the time? Why can't we just be nice? Yeah. Why is that kid so mean to Harry? He's an orphan.
They're quite categorical tropes, aren't they? It's almost like the political compass. What happens if you sit right in the middle and you could go Gryffindor, you could go Slytherin, you could go Hufflepuff, you could go Ravenclaw?
Well, isn't that...
You just get arbitrary chucked into one of them and you're just like, who are all these idiots?
Isn't that a thing in the first book when the Sorting Hat is talking to Harry and it's like, Richard, you're all Slytherin, maybe.
Yeah, this is something that my girlfriend Kelly has a very good theory about. It's that if you are on the fence or just even any sort of sorting, the hat puts you in the house in which you will grow the most or like whatever you most need. So when you look at Hermione, for example, she's already crazy smart. She is perfectly intelligent. Being in Ravenclaw isn't going to put her over the edge because she's still already going to be that smart. But she needs to be a little more brave and more okay with like fudging the rules and doing what's necessary. And that's why she gets put into Gryffindor. Similar thing with like Neville or like Ron really benefits from bravery.
Ron should be a Hufflepuff. Come on.
He probably should be, but the bravery helps and you gotta make Harry have two friends, right?
Well, I mean, the other thing is like Voldemort and Harry have this connection that we know about. Isn't it plausible that the Sorting Hat was like, oh yeah, there seems to be this like big like dose of evil in him. Not sure where it's from, but I guess that could fit him into Slytherin.
Yeah, and they made a whole big scene about it in the first book that he could have gone either way. And then Harry just kept saying, not Slytherin, not Slytherin, not Slytherin. Yeah. So it's like, ugh, fine, shut up.
The Sorting Hat is just fucking with him.
What if the Sorting Hat is just a pure random and everyone is just like confirmation biasing everything after the fact?
Yeah. Sorting Hat is like, I don't give a fuck. I'm a hat.
I think it's like cold reading. I'm seeing an S for, no, it's a G.
What's your favorite number? 12. Hufflepuff!
I have an awful question.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Is there slash fic about Harry and Voldemort?
Yes, I've read one.
Oh.
I read it as part of Fangasm, which is a fan fiction podcast that does all sort of erotic stuff, and it was a Harry Voldemort dream sequence, all like thematically based on the song Toxic by Britney Spears.
Were there a lot appropriate of puns about wands?
There was a couple puns. The biggest one is that I think he said something to the effect of like, check out my butt Voldemort, I think was in the wording.
That's a bit clunky.
Oh wow, yeah. Okay.
Harry Potter, that would work better.
There are a couple other ones. My big gripe with it was that, spoiler alert for the ending for anyone gonna read it, it's a big like, it was all a dream thing. Yeah. So I thought they were like actually doing stuff, and then it was like Harry wakes up in his bed in a cold sweat, and I was like, fuck you, come on.
Yeah,
it's fan fiction, you don't have to do this.
But they can't, even in the realms of fan fiction, they can't allow Harry and Voldemort to have a sexual connection.
Mm-mm.
It has to be a nightmare. Anyway, sorry, I've led us down a dark path.
So they then ask Harry about his dad. He says he works in the ministry in the magical accidents division, and Scabier buys it. Greyback's not so sure, though. Then they find the sword, but they don't know what it truly is. They don't know that it's a Horcrux. They just think it's a really nice sword. Voldemort thoughts then at this point start creeping back into Harry's mind. His scar starts hurting, all of that classic stuff. While this is happening, Greyback takes a look at the Daily Prophet, and the Daily Prophet has a headline saying that Hermione Granger is a girl known to be traveling with Harry Potter. And then he looks at Hermione and back at the picture, and he says, hey, you kind of look like the person in this picture. Is this you? And then Hermione, with no poker face at all, is like, no, it's not me. I'm Penelope Clearwater. Totally gives it away. Greyback then goes into sleuth mode and starts investigating Harry a bit more thoroughly. He sees what looks like a scar on his forehead, but isn't exactly sure if that's the scar. And he brings up that he thought Harry wore glasses. After he says this, one of the snatchers say that they found glasses in the tent. So then they grab him and shove him on his face, and Greyback is convinced that it's Harry Potter.
Right. If you're a wizard, wouldn't you just perform the wand equivalent of laser surgery on your eyes?
It seems like it, but I guess not. Maybe it's like LASIK where it's the 1 in 1 million chance that it doesn't work and Harry doesn't want to take that risk.
I mean, I quite like the way that my glasses frame my face. Otherwise, I think my eyes look too small.
I love glasses, but if you're Harry and you've been in a lot of shitty situations,
where you get your glasses knocked off.
Your glasses are knocked off or they're fogged up or you're in water, then don't you think you would just make it so that you could get along without them.
Just wear contacts.
At the very least, he should get a pair of Rec Specs, which I don't know if they have those across the pond. Those are those like action goggles, that are glasses that people wore to play basketball in the 90s.
You're basically kind of describing like Harry Potter in a pair of Oakleys.
Or Harry Potter as a steampunk.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, Rec Specs are distinctly made of clear plastic, but
it's more like kind of lab look.
Yes, they were like sporty lab eye goggle glasses.
Do they mention that Harry's face gets de-swollen?
It's like a gradual process, isn't it?
They say that later on when he's in Malfoy Manor that it's gotten a little bit better, but they do note, and we'll cover this, but they do note that Harry looks in a mirror and at first doesn't even recognize himself.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be at least still significantly bad when he gets back to the Malfoys' place. After they shove the glasses on him, Harry keeps having these visions of what Voldemort is seeing, and he keeps trying to fight them. He keeps seeing Voldemort inside of some tall tower and looking at some sort of skinny figure in a cloak or a blanket of some sort. We'll learn later on what this is and its significance, but Harry is really trying to fight them because he doesn't want to, you know, do the whole freak out Voldemort thing. So Greyback wants to take them to Malfoy Manor for the reward, which is 200,000 galleons.
Is that a lot?
Yeah, a galleon is like $10.
Wow. Mm. It's not like yen then.
Yeah, it's like $2 million.
That's pretty sweet.
Which I don't know how the pound is doing.
Terrible.
I assume yeah, it's
really
awful. Bad.
It's doing really poorly against the galleon.
Oh, yeah. The galleon is just killing it right now.
If you're a werewolf, though, what are you spending that on?
Right? I don't know. Yeah, what's this guy doing?
Beard tonic.
Okay.
Shampoo.
Toothpaste.
Like, what are wizards' expenses? I have a lot of questions about wizard capitalism as well, because there's very few places for them to buy anything.
Yeah.
And presumably they can magic a lot of things. They don't seem to own cars that often.
Mm-mm.
Do they go to the supermarket and stuff to get food?
They never go on holiday. It's not like the Death Eaters are spending all their money on going to luxurious locations.
You don't need to book a flight. You can just continually disapparate wherever you need to go.
Right.
No, Hogwarts doesn't charge tuition, I don't think.
No.
Hmm.
What are they spending their money
on? What's the point of it?
I guess anything that you can buy in Hogsmeade and Diagon Alley. So butter beer, fire whiskey, robes, food.
That's funny, pets. Jelly beans.
Yeah, a lot of candy that might backfire horribly on yeah. you.
Quidditch accessories.
Yes. Candy.
The Death Eaters then disapparate with all of the prisoners. And at this point, the scar is just absolutely killing Harry. And he starts to see more clearly the vision of inside of a tower. And he doesn't know exactly what's going on, but we'll learn in a second. So the Death Eaters try to enter Malfoy Manor, but a voice says, "State your purpose." And then they say, "We've got Potter." And the gates fling open.
Yeah.
Harry sees the albino peacock that has been mentioned earlier in the book. And for this, I was listening to the Stephen Fry audiobook. So I guess you two would pronounce it this way too. I like that he calls it albino instead of albino.
That's what you're saying, British English. Mm. What's the significance of the albino peacock?
I just think it's racist to own an all-white peacock.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's like, this thing is colorful and diverse. No, make it all white, please. I think really it's just creepy.
An all-white peacock is quite a rare peacock. Mm-hmm. And to have a peacock strutting around your house is already a kind of rich wanker thing to do.
Yeah.
So it's just like upper level rich wanker behavior.
It's in the garden though, right? It's not in the...
I mean, strutting around the perimeter of your house,
Martin.
It's not
in the front room shitting on the carpet.
Might be. You might have run of the house. There might be a peacock flap in the door.
Does that mean... Is an albino peacock's like fan display really boring and monochrome?
But it's still impressive structurally.
It's big in size, but it's just like a big white fan.
Someone sent me a picture of one after I made fun of it in the previous episode of Potterless, where the peacock is there. It's pretty, but yeah, it kind of defeats the purpose of a peacock because it's just all white.
It's no common or garden peacock.
I'm just going to Google this to see what
that is. Yeah, I mean, it's still pretty because it has lots of feathers and stuff, but it's not great. I would prefer a colorful one.
Oh, that's quite handsome. It looks like a snowflake.
It looks like a big doily. I would have one if it didn't just say that I was a terrible person to have my own peacock.
You can have an albino peacock.
I don't.
I'll get you an albino peacock.
Also, they're kind of violent as pets go, aren't they?
Yeah, they seem very terrifying. It's one of those animals that I would just be confused by. Like, if someone was like, "This is my peacock," I don't know what I would do. I would probably keep my distance. I don't know if they can fly or if they run or if they jump. Are they fast? I know nothing. I just know that I don't want to mess with one.
Yeah. That's a sensible approach. Or don't approach the peacock is the sensible approach. So maybe it's another guard creature of their house.
It could be.
You know what else it could be, Past Mike? Hey, it's editing, Mike. How's it going? It could be time to take a break for Wingardium Adridosa. Actually, yes, I decree that it is time for Wingardium Adridosa. Today's episode of Potterless is brought to you by Away. Now, we know while the squad is on this extended camping trip, they have Hermione's bag and the little pouch that Harry got from Hagrid, and these are fine, but they can be awkward to carry and they can get heavy. Wouldn't it have been better if they had something that was safe, secure, stylish, ergonomic, easy to carry? I know what you're thinking. Yes, they should have had an Away suitcase. Away uses high-quality materials, but doesn't have the middleman involved, so they can offer it to you at a low price. You can choose from a bunch of colors in four different sizes, and the design features are incredible. All of the suitcases are made with premium German polycarbonate, and you're right, that does mean that they're unrivaled in strength and impact resistance while still being very lightweight. It comes with four 360-degree spinner wheels, so you can hold it however you want to. It has a combination lock built into the top that is TSA approved, so it can keep all of your things safe, and you can get your Away suitcase to come with a portable battery that fits in a perfect little slot and can charge your phone, tablet, e-reader, whatever you need charged. The suitcases have a lifetime warranty, so you're not buying a suitcase, you're buying a lifetime's worth of suitcases. It's perfect, and all of the suitcases come with a 100-day trial and free shipping in the lower 48 states. Away sent me a suitcase, and I am so happy with it. The timing could not have been more perfect, as I'm using it on my trip to Italy that I'm going to take. It has features that compress your clothes down inside the suitcase, and it has room to give on the outside, which is perfect for me, a criminal overpacker. And you Potterless listeners can get $20 off a suitcase if you go to awaytravel.com/potterless and use the code Potterless at checkout. Again, go to awaytravel.com/potterless, use the code Potterless at checkout, and you can get $20 off a suitcase and start packing away all of your important wizarding items for your big camping trip today. And now you'll hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for me to be a full-time podcaster. Some of these ads will be read by me, others of them won't. The ones that aren't are inserted locally, so if you live internationally, don't be surprised if you hear an ad in your country's native language. And once those ads are complete, we'll get back to this episode of Potterless.
This episode of Potterless is brought to you by Arena Club. Now, if you listen to this podcast, it should be no secret that I am both a sports nerd and more of a traditional nerd. And when you think of these two types of nerddom, there's one thing that links them together, and that is card collecting. Whether you are looking to buy, trade, sell, or display a card collection of sports cards or Pokemon cards, you should check out Arena Club. ArenaClub.com is the place where you can do all of these things. I have recently made a purchase on the marketplace. I got Lieutenant Surge's Raichu, which is my favorite Pokemon, and I didn't even know that there was a Lieutenant Surge version of the Raichu. So that is a card that I now have, and it's not just some digital thing. I can have this card physically mailed to me. So there's a bunch of cool stuff you can do with Arena Club, including their slab packs. If you have ever done any sort of card collecting, you know that ripping packs or repacks can be a zero transparency type of thing where you're just hoping you get some sort of cool card. But what's nice about the slab packs with Arena Club is that you have full transparency. You see what available cards are there, what your percentage of getting them is, what the gradings are. So it is not a complete black box. You're going into this knowing what cards you might get. And I've been using Arena Club and it's pretty cool. It's very easy for me to look up different cards. I can favorite them, see what I want. And then whenever I want them shipped to me, I can get them shipped to me. And then I'll have the physical versions of them. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/potterless. Wow, that is a wild offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack is $40 right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/potterless for 10% off your first purchase. So if you want to collect some cards or rip open some packs in a more transparent way, whether you're a sports nerd or a Pokemon nerd or all sorts of nerds like me, you can use Arena Club today.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So we get a more clear vision now of what Voldemort is seeing. There's an emaciated figure in a blanket looking at Voldemort saying, "So you have come. I thought you would one day."
Loving your voice work.
Just really trying to audition for an audiobook right now. Hey, Audible.
I'd hire you.
Please hire me to say words. Then he goes on and says, "Your journey was pointless. I never had it." And then Voldemort goes, "You lie!" And then gets all pissed off at him. And at that point, I realize, oh, this is Grindelwald, because Voldemort's on this hellbent search for the Elder Wand, and he thinks that he has it because that's what Grigorovich told him.
Wait, that's not Grindelwald, is it?
Isn't Grindelwald dead?
I don't know if they actually confirm in these two chapters. I thought it was Grindelwald, because in the previous chapters, when Voldemort is going to Ollivander and then Grigorovich, they say that the thief took it when he sees the flashback of Grigorovich, and that person in the flashback matches the picture that Harry sees of Grindelwald with Dumbledore. So I'm pretty sure this is like a really old Grindelwald, and because this prison we learn is Nuremberg, which is the prison that Dumbledore put Grindelwald in.
Oh, that makes more sense, actually. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying. Yeah.
No problem. It's my job to know Harry Potter things. It's very fun because when I first started these books and this podcast, all of my questions were like me asking everything. And now we're on chapter 23 of book 7. I'm fairly knowledgeable in all things Harry Potter. I'm almost the best. So back from this flashback, Narcissa checks them in and she says that her son Draco is home from the Easter holidays. So if that really is Harry Potter, he will know. So they're brought into a room that also has Lucius Malfoy in it, and Narcissa calls in Draco. This is the point where Harry looks in the mirror, doesn't even recognize himself.
So this is the point where the stinginess is useful, isn't it? Because otherwise everything is happening the same.
Yes.
You know, they still think it's Potter, but the fact that they're not sure is why Voldemort doesn't turn up right now and kill everyone.
Right, it's just slowing everyone's roll.
Yeah, so that stingy is a device just to stretch this out a little bit, and they've got a chance to escape.
But also,
to do something.
How quickly is Voldemort able to travel when someone presses the dark mark? He's just there sort of instantaneously almost, right?
Well, no, he couldn't, because he has to travel to within apparition range. It's not clear what that is, but there's a reference later, and it's like, soon he'll be close enough to apparate into the... but they don't say how far that is.
Yeah, I really want to know what is the exact distance that he has to be. I really want to know how many feet you can disapparate and show up somewhere else in.
I just have a lot of questions about the infrastructure of the Wizarding World.
Oh, have you heard of this podcast called Potterless? That's
I don't care about the characters or plot.
No, I ask so many logistical questions that J.K. Rowling's like, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Magic.
Yeah, that's always the answer. So Harry still is determined to avoid making eye contact with Draco, though. And when Draco is supposed to look over Harry, I don't know if Draco is being indifferent or scared or what, but Draco says he can't tell if it's Harry.
I think he's very reluctant. I think he doesn't want to be implicated in any more or like responsible for any more wrongdoing after the incident with Dumbledore in the previous book.
Hasn't that been the progress of Draco in the 6th and 7th book, that he's not enough of an evil cunt?
He is evil enough to facilitate the Death Eaters coming and then getting about to kill Dumbledore, but then when he actually is supposed to murder Dumbledore, he can't come to grips with it. And I think this might be the first time that we see him I think this is the first time we've seen him since he failed to kill Dumbledore. So yeah, it kind of seems like he's in this whole position where he's just out on the Death Eaters and wants nothing to do with it. And he comes across as like a moody teenager that doesn't want to do what his parents are doing, but it's more legitimate because
homicidal killers.
It's a little different when he's like, no, mom and dad. Like, it's not like he got dragged to some party he doesn't want to be at. Like, no, I don't want to go to so-and-so's baby shower. But instead, it's like, no, I don't want to go to your big murder meeting, guys. Like, so it's more valid.
It's like if your parents were the Mansons, basically.
Your friends are so noisy and they stink and they're weird and they won't leave.
I was trying to read, remember from the books, like, what's the sort of status with the other Malfoys at this point? Because Lucius still seems really into it.
He's like bottom of the totem pole because he screwed up so poorly in book five, and then he was in Azkaban, and then he'd break him out.
He's still got lovely hair, though. We'll always have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the Death Eaters broke him out, so he's with the Death Eaters, but they're all really annoyed with him, especially Voldemort.
Exactly. He's like really trying to prove himself. So he, later on in this chapter, he's like really anxious about wanting to be right. Like, I found Harry
Potter.
I'm going to
bring Voldemort the
it.
Prize. Yeah, yeah. So, mm-hmm. But what about Narcissa? What's happening with her?
She seems to be in pretty decent status with them, but she always just seems like kind of passive. Like, yeah. It doesn't seem like she holds a whole lot of power, but I think she's not in any sort of bad standing.
She's like an accessory, isn't she?
But what about her motivation? Is it really Lucius that's driving this whole family towards, you know, Death Eaters are great kind of thing?
I mean, they're definitely both evil, but Narcissa has other concerns outside of pleasing Voldemort. Like, she is still concerned about Draco, and she was uncomfortable with Draco's task in the sixth book being for Draco to murder Dumbledore. Yeah. So she at least is more multidimensional than just pure blood purity. Let's see if I can say the word pure more. But she's like, she has more than just a one-track mind. Like, Lucius is just all evil everything. And I think Narcissa at least has some concerns, like the well-being of her family.
Yeah, she's kind of got a maternal instinct. Well, you get the sense that Lucius is just kind of, he's very ambitious, and that blinds him to the having a wider character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's more interested in like the power of it and really trying to be Voldemort's right-hand man.
Yeah.
So the reason why they are so hesitant to call Voldemort is because they don't want to be wrong. Apparently, the last time Voldemort was called in for nothing, some really bad stuff happened to two Death Eaters, Roll and Dolohov.
Did he flip over a desk?
I'm trying to think of like what's something that's like mildly annoying. Oh, he took their socks and ran them underwater and then made them put them back on, and they couldn't take them off.
I mean, that's basically waterboarding. Right?
Yeah.
The other day, I saw a friend who reminded me of this great prank we played on Martin a few years ago.
Oh, that wasn't a great prank.
It was very funny, because we realized that our friend had turned up at our house, and he had the same shoes as Martin. So while Martin was out the room, we swapped my friend's shoes with Martin's because they're like three sizes too small for Martin. And then when he came back, just watched him struggle to put them on.
That's pretty good. It's a good harmless prank.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing Voldemort would do if he was irritated about having been recalled from an important killing person mission.
Yeah. Whereas he'd be like, you called me all the way from foreign prison for this shit.
I'd almost got to Nuremberg. No, that's not what it's called. So, what's it called?
Nuremberg,
It's called Nuremberg.
Nuremberg? Mm-hmm. Nuremberg as in the real place.
Oh, wait. No, it's Nurmengard.
Nurmengard. Sorry. Yeah.
I was like, you're right.
I was about to be indicted for my war crimes. It was my moment in the spotlight.
Yeah, I was like, Nuremberg seems too familiar. Yeah. I've only heard Nurmengard once before, and it was a couple chapters ago. Okay. Yes, Nurmengard. The same kind of thing. So Narcissa says that the girl is definitely Hermione. And Lucius is like, that's got to be Ron, right? Draco, is that Ron? And Draco's like, I don't know, maybe. He's very disinterested in this whole situation.
Leave me alone.
I just want to go play Xbox.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're a wizard, do you even get TV? Do you just get like historic toys like a shuttlecock and a hoop?
You get the wooden paddle with the rubber ball and the string.
The newspapers are a bit like TV, aren't they? Because, you know, they've got moving pictures.
Well, it's like GIFs, isn't it?
Yeah.
The wizard newspapers.
Yeah. Did they have GIFs when she wrote this?
They did not. Well, maybe when she wrote this
she
one, but not when
she invented the GIF.
Out.
I don't know when the GIF started, but I wonder if someone read Harry Potter and was like, wait a second.
You're saying J.K. Rowling invented it. It's the GIF as well, isn't it? It's
not. I don't subscribe to the GIF thing.
The person who created the file type says it's GIF, but it's not the graphical interface.
No. I think also, as a words person, I've come down on the side of GIF because people know what you mean when you say that, whereas GIF, people don't associate that phonetically with that. They associate it with lemons and stuff.
Yeah, when you give someone a gift, you're not like, oh, thanks for this GIF. I don't know.
Well, apparently it was invented on June 15th, 1987.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So she could have been influenced by the GIF / GIF.
Wait. It was 1987. What was wrong with the 90s that we were not slinging GIFs around? Yeah. What are we doing? We had AOL. How is like AOL not GIF central?
And I mean, this is set in 1996.
Yeah.
Maybe Malfoy is on the early internet.
Oh, it's like, Mom, get off the phone. I got to play Neopets, Mom. I got to feed my Jub-Jub.
I'm going to write my JoCities site.
Got to write on my Zanga page, my live journal.
The Death Eaters really are like people who would lurk on early forums trying to entrap kids like Draco.
Yeah, they're the like dark chat room catfishing people.
They really are. It's not cool.
Mm-mm. They're not great. They're not great at all. Speaking of not great, Bellatrix enters.
Well, she's a fun character.
Wacky aunt.
We've all got one.
I am one.
The casting choice of Helena Bonham Carter was perfect. Very good for this one.
Yeah.
So she comes in and was like, let's call Voldemort right now. And Lucius is like, hold on. First off, I want to do the summoning. But second, we got to make sure we're right.
And thirdly, we're only 2/3 of the way through the book. So he's clearly not going to die now.
Exactly. Come on. The dramatic things always happen at the end. Here's something. I'm glad that I have two British guests here, because this is something that I have such a gripe with in the book, is that J.K. Rowling loves the word grope. Do you guys use that as like a normal word?
It's usually referring...
like to feel around for something?
Yeah, not. I mean, not loads. I think the way it's most in currency now is if someone inappropriately touches someone else, say on a train.
Or on a boob.
So that's, in America, it's solely used for that. I've never heard a normal person be like, oh yeah, let me just grope around for a nickel in my pocket. But J.K. Rowling uses the word grope every single time she's talking about someone like fumbling around in a bag for something or like trying to find their wand in their pocket. She uses it so much, and people have always like replied to me online and they're like, grope's not that weird of word. So I feel very vindicated that both of you were like, nah, it's a weird word.
Well, it's not weird in books, but it would be weird to say it, I think. But then I guess, why would you refer to the actor?
Could you grope her into that cupboard and just find me a saucepan? That would be a strange sentence.
Yes, that would be.
Yeah. Was it something that it just didn't age well? Like when these books were written, was it more normal? Kind of like how the word queer used to just mean weird. And now if you say queer, it's like, oh, you're definitely talking about someone's sexual preference.
I think it's a high fantasy thing. I think it's the kind of word that people put in fantasy books.
I think she's using a deliberately retro vocabulary for this. Like they're in the vein of 1950s boarding school novels. People use some very kind of gentle mid-20th century swear replacements, that kind of thing. They don't speak like kids of the 90s, which they are.
Yeah, I was gonna say, not enough people going tubular. Radical.
Don't have a cow, man.
There's a whole deleted scene where they're watching The Simpsons and listening to Nirvana.
Smell you later, Potter.
That would have been so good.
That would be good.
I bet the Slytherins were much better at being on top of current trends than any of the other houses.
They'd have been listening to Marilyn Manson, wouldn't they?
How did no one have a slap bracelet? Like, how did no one have jellies?
You know what they didn't need? Global hypercolor, because I bet wizards could just change the colors of their clothes with magic rather than their own body heat.
Yeah, sounds about right. So they bicker, they grope for their wands, they all start fighting, then they get separated. Bellatrix destroys all of the other people, like, they are no match for her.
So do we already know this, or is this a scene to establish that she's kind of a badass?
We already know that she's very good.
I sort of think we already know that she's like a powerful wizard.
Yeah.
Or witch.
Yeah, but much like any Harry Potter book, you got to remind the reader, hey, just in case you didn't read the last book for some reason, starting with 7, this lady's good at magic.
I've heard Harry Potter's really good. I'm going to start halfway through book 6.
You know, the first book I read was book 4.
Was it really?
Yep.
That's funny.
Did you go back?
Yeah, I did. I was working in a secondhand bookshop, and book 4 was the one that we had in stock, so I read it.
I've had some people mention to me that they read it in a weird, like the machete Star Wars order, where they're like, oh yeah, I went like 6, 3, 7, 1, 5, 2. It's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, if you read it in that order, it unlocks a secret meaning.
Is it like watching like Dark Side of the Moon backwards? Listen to the Dark Side of the Moon backwards while you watch Wizard of Oz.
Sure.
So at this point, Bellatrix sees the sword and she starts freaking out. And she is very concerned about the sword being here because it's supposed to be in her vault. And she is asking Greyback where they got it. They said they found it. It was in the tent, et cetera, et cetera. But Bellatrix already came into the room at 11, and now she's been turned up to like 58. She is not doing very well stress-wise. So she tells Draco to take these Snatchers and Greyback and Scabior outside and to finish them off. And she basically says, if you're too chicken shit to handle it, I'll go out and do it myself.
I like killing people.
Yeah, why doesn't she just go and do it herself? It would probably be a lot quicker, and it might be a useful stress outlet.
Because she's got to torture Hermione to find out where she got the sword from.
She can multitask.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take that long to be like, abadacadabra, abadacadabra. It's just a couple syllables. But yeah, she wants to save her breath so she can torture a child.
It's getting Draco out the way to object to the child torture of someone he's known for nearly 7 years at this point.
Very true. So yes, Bellatrix says that she is going to start torturing Hermione. She says to send everyone down into the cellar except for her. Ron starts screaming, no, take me instead. Bellatrix slaps him in the face and then says, you're next if she dies during my questioning. So Bellatrix stresses that Harry Potter must not be harmed because Voldemort wants to take care of it himself.
Well, that's convenient for Harry, isn't it?
Right? Super convenient.
Easy street.
So Harry and Ron are thrown into the cellar and they start to hear Hermione scream. And Ron keeps yelling over and over again, like, Hermione, Hermione. And Harry's like, all right, dude, I get it. But also, we got to get out of here. So stop yelling. You're stressing me out.
That is very irritating.
Inside the cellar is Luna Lovegood,
yay!
Which is sweet. And also there is Ollivander. Cool.
He's been there ages.
Yeah.
He's been there over a year. But someone's fed him, which is surprising.
Yeah. Well, they got to keep him alive just in case he remembers how to get the Elder Wand, I guess. So Luna makes use of a nail to break off the ropes that they have them tied. And is there not some sort of like magical handcuff equivalent that they could put them in? Mm. It seems like ropes is a bit rudimentary for these wizards.
Very retro. Very retro.
So Ron then uses the, what the book says, Deluminator, but I only will call the put outer so that they can see. Luna gets them all free now that she has light and can see what she's doing. And Griphook, who also got thrown down there, Griphook is the goblin that was with Dean. He's not doing very well. Hmm. All the people in the cellar are trying to find a way out. And upstairs, you hear that Bellatrix thinks Hermione is lying. She thinks that she got in the vault and somehow got the sword out. She keeps using Crucio on Hermione, and you can tell it's just not going well for Hermione upstairs. Again, the book says that Harry gropes inside of the Hagrid pouch for the golden snitch.
That is a very rich sentence he just said.
he's just like grasping at straws. Or as J.K. Rowling would say, groping at straws to try to figure out a way to get out. Tries to snitch, it doesn't work. Tries his broken wand and nothing works. Looks in the mirror, which before he thought he had seen Dumbledore's eye, and he still sees this eye, which he is convinced is Dumbledore's. And then he yells like, help us, we're in Malfoy Manor. And the eye blinks and then goes away. So maybe it did work. Hermione tells Bellatrix that the sword is a fake. And Lucius suggests that they should get Griphook, a goblin, to go check. So as they hear footsteps coming downward, Harry grabs him and is like, you have to lie. You have to say it's a fake, please. Draco is who was sent down. He goes in, grabs Griphook, and slams the door. And at the exact same time as the door slams, there is a crack, meaning some sort of apparition. Ron clicks the put outer to see who it is. And it's everybody's favorite house elf, Dobby.
Dobby! Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm looking forward to spending some more time with this character.
Oh, no!
I hope we've got a good couple of chapters just hanging out with Dobby. That'd be nice.
Catch up after all this
so,
time.
So, at first, I was underwhelmed, but then I realized, oh, goblin magic, this actually is pretty smart. So Ron, I love, at first starts to go, Dobby, like excited, and then Harry punches him in the face to get him to shut up.
Oh, it's Dobby, come to rescue us. Oh.
Yeah. Ron is the opposite of an MVP.
He's a handicap.
Absolute liability.
So Dobby is absolutely shook, but he's determined. Dobby says that he has come to rescue Harry Potter.
Do the Dobby voice.
Oh, God. I don't know the Dobby.
You don't want to.
I don't. Just be like, Dobby has come to rescue you. He's like a high-pitched Yoda in my brain.
I feel like it's a cross between Yoda and Gollum at this point.
He's like a young, tiny Yoda. Harry gives him the whole creature plan from Regulus back before, where he says, disapparate Luna, Dean, and Ollivander to Bill and Fleur's, and then come back. So, new Dobby is dope. He is, like, on a mission to get it done. I very much enjoyed this iteration of Dobby.
Yeah.
Really excited for him to make his presence felt throughout the rest of this book.
Yeah.
Harry gets another Voldemort vision of, who I think is Grindelwald, telling him to go ahead and kill me, but it'll do nothing. There is so much that you don't understand, Voldemort. We go back from the flashback, and then Dobby disapparates, and upstairs they hear the crack. So they send down Wormtail this time instead. And Ron and Harry know that they're going to have to just tackle him when he gets in. So they stand on either side of the door. And here is my problem. They have made a dungeon in their cellar, and they don't have a fucking window in the door for people to look inside? Are you kidding me? Like, what kind of garbage operation are they working? Ugh.
It's pitch black. You wouldn't be able to say anything.
I guess, but like, shouldn't they have some sort of like peephole? Because they keep telling them like, stand back, I'm coming in, stand back. Like, what if the people just, I don't know, didn't listen to you?
Well, you get bashed by the door, wouldn't you? It's a safety thing as much as anything else.
I think also anyone who went to Hogwarts has become used to a great deal of inconvenience in where they live.
Mm.
Like, would you want your staircases to move? No. Would you want to be unable to enter a room without answering a riddle? No. Terrible.
It just seems like hindsight on the Death Eaters' part. We really just do learn that they are a poorly run organization.
They're not smart.
Mm-mm.
They're too diverted by their own strong emotions.
Yeah, they're all too selfish and they have no chill at all.
No chill.
So they stand on either side of the door and Wormtail flings open the door and immediately just gets absolutely trucked. Harry covers his mouth. Ron moves his wand hand away and Lucius asks what's wrong. And then you get a quote, nothing, all fine, Ron said in a passable imitation of Wormtail's voice, according to the book, which I love. I really want to see, I haven't seen the movie yet, obviously, but I really need this scene to be in the movie. I want to see Rupert Grint do a Wormtail impression. And then everyone upstairs be like, yep, that's Wormtail.
And also surprising presence of mind from Ron not to go, oh, we're just ambushing Wormtail. Don't come down here. Yeah,
nothing to say here.
In his dipshit way.
So Wormtail then has Harry by the throat with his silver hand. And Harry says, you're going to kill me after I saved your life? You owe me. And this is something that once he did this way back in book three, I knew that Wormtail was going to do something to help them, but I did not think it was going to be what happens. Mm. I thought it was going to be like a big showdown duel and Wormtail is supposed to kill Harry and does the classic henchman like turn around and actually hurt Voldemort thing. I thought it was going to be much more dramatic. This is what happens is a lot more dark and I did not see this coming at all.
This is the most amazing thing that happens in this chapter.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. So Wormtail's got him by the throat. Harry tells him this thing where he says, you owe me. And then Pettigrew has what the book describes as a merciful impulse. And there's like a twitch in his hand. And then all of a sudden it slowly releases and Harry's able to pry himself free. And then Peter Pettigrew just looks very confused. And then he cannot control his own hand. And it starts to grab his own throat and choke Pettigrew to death. Ron grabs his wand and they try to get him to stop. They're trying spells. They're trying to pry it. They can't do it. And then Peter Pettigrew's silver hand just chokes him out and kills him.
Yeah. Very goth.
I think that's how the original ending to Dr. Strangelove went.
Yeah, right. There is the sentient hand thing.
It's really
dumb. That's a whole...
I didn't quite get it. Also, like...
Is it like Evil Dead styles?
Yeah, yeah. A Farewell to Arms. Wouldn't it require the volition of his arm to move his hand to... Like, once his hand's at his throat, it can...
Maybe his hand's pulling his arm up.
But that doesn't work. Like, with what leverage?
Yeah, how far does the silver hand go? That's so funny. You're right. Like, he could just move his shoulder away, right?
He could just,
yeah,
exactly, he could just sit on his hand.
Yeah.
But is it that Voldemort gave him the hand, which means Voldemort has some control over the hand?
Yeah, that's the thought, is that Voldemort gifted him this silver hand.
And he's like, Peter, you fucking sissy, you're gonna get it.
He wrote some sort of, like, clause in the hand magic. If he's at least nice to Harry Potter ever, it will murder him.
It's quite a nice idea, isn't it? It's like, you're right, it isn't how you expected this character to end. It just has like a literal moment of not being a complete douchebag.
Exactly.
And that's enough to trigger, okay, failsafe option, kill Peter Pettigrew.
I suppose what it says is that the people who are on the side of evil don't have an easy time of it either.
Yeah, I guess
no
not.
No one's having a good time.
I don't feel like he really deserved that. Although he did do some nasty stuff, didn't he?
Yeah, he did a lot of bad things.
It's a very abrupt way of getting rid of a character that has been in the books a long time.
Right. Yeah, it was shocking how quickly it went down.
I'm not sure they needed to do that.
I was impressed, though.
I feel like there's other opportunities to...
It's like something out of a Greek myth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If anything, it just makes Voldemort that much more intimidating to be like, holy shit, this dude's magic is nuts, if he was able to put that little failsafe clause into his hand.
Yeah.
Do you think
his
hand had disobeyed him at any other point?
Ooh.
In the time since he's had it, like... Would it like force him to masturbate or something? Like
oh no! There has got to be a fanfic about that.
Stop hitting yourself! Stop hitting yourself! Stop hitting yourself!
Well, there's a real danger if you sat on your evil hand, it would like finger you to death.
Oh, incredible! If the scene was Peter Pettigrew fisting himself.
Oh my gosh! But it would be a fun prank if, like, all the Death Eaters are, like, drunk and having a party, and then Voldemort, like, whispers to Dolph, like, check this shit out, and then makes him, like, punch him in the face or do whatever.
Or get him to do baton twirling or shadow puppetry.
It does feel a bit like that story about the, it's one of those urban legends, isn't it, about the guy who loses an arm in an accident, and he's given a new arm, and it belongs to a killer. So the arm goes and does crimes.
What's that called? It's not Evil Dead. It's it was like they made it into like a bad Jessica Alba movie in the 90s.
Hey, editing Mike back again. That would be the 1999 box office flop Idle Hands, which has a blistering 16% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's the same thing where it's like someone's hand, and only their hand gets possessed by the devil, and they can't control it. And it's a similar thing where you would think, like, if you could control your elbow, wouldn't you be okay?
Totally. Well, just wear a sling.
Yeah. Dislocate your shoulder on purpose.
A straight jacket.
Yeah.
But then maybe he'll, like, pinch his own nipple to death.
Very kinky deaths from you, Helen.
Maybe he'll wank himself to death.
I mean, he was a rat for a long time, so he's probably got a lot of wanking to do. Mm-hmm. Carry on, please.
So Ron and Harry are shocked by this, but they got to keep moving, so they creep up the stairs.
They've never seen a man wank himself to death before.
They creep up the stairs, and they peek through the door, which is open, and they see what's going down. Bellatrix asks Griphook if the sword is the true sword. Griphook says that it's a fake. Bellatrix then drops all of her tension and just really quickly goes from 100 to 0 real quick and goes, oh, and now we call the Dark Lord.
Why does she trust him?
That's what I don't understand.
Is it because she's spent like weeks beating the crap out of him?
Because he's her banker, and why wouldn't you? But also, I think like Griphook is portrayed in these chapters as not being a nice guy, so maybe she thinks he's on the side of evil, whereas he's on the side of good, he just has a bad personality.
Yeah, what we learn in the next chapter is that goblins and wizards aren't really getting along well, so I guess just the assumption is that he has nothing to gain, because we do learn that he's like a bit nicer of a guy, or at least is more like tolerant when he sees what Harry does for Dobby later on. So I guess Bellatrix's thought is like, I'm torturing this dude, why would he want to help? Like, he has nothing to gain by trying to help these people. So I guess, but that being said, the Death Eaters are very trusting. Like, when Ron, Hermione, and Harry give them fake names, they're just like, sounds good, and they do some very light interrogating. So yeah, they need to have a bit better protocol here at Death Eater headquarters.
Well, also, she seems to enjoy interrogating people. Mm-hmm. So you think you'd just be like, are you sure, zap? Are you sure, zap?
I don't think she's that smart, though, because I guess she's so ruled by temporary moods. She's visceral. She doesn't seem to be cerebral.
Yeah, she doesn't really think things through a whole lot. Yeah. So she touches her dark mark, and then we cut to another Voldemort situation from Harry's scar. Grindelwald is, or at least supposed Grindelwald, is taunting Voldemort by saying that the wand will never be his, and Voldemort then decides to kill him. So now we're back in Malfoy Manor, and Bellatrix says that they can get rid of the mudblood, and she offers her to Greyback, and then Ron at this point just yells no and barges in.
That's what
using Wormtail's wand, he uses Expelliarmus to successfully disarm Bellatrix's wand.
Nice.
And it lands perfectly in Harry's hand, which is very convenient and very perfect.
I feel like Ron is inconsistently characterized between being a complete fuckwit and an absolute ninja.
Yeah, he's an all or nothing type character. It's like when you use one of those really powerful attacks in Pokemon where it either like murders the other one or completely misses. Like, there's no middle ground for Ron Weasley.
It's sort of like Bellatrix in that respect.
Yeah.
Harry is also, remember, a jock. So it's not surprising that he catches it, because he's a very good Quidditch player.
This is true. He's good at catching things flying through the air that are very tiny.
Yeah, that is his one skill.
So jinxes start flying everywhere until Bellatrix yells, stop or she dies. And she has her knife held up to Hermione's throat.
Okay, now this is interesting to me, because I don't know whether we've seen anyone use a mundane weapon to kill someone.
Not that I know of.
It's all like mythical things. That's probably just like a kitchen knife or something. Probably smells of onions.
I mean, it's smart. There should be more normal weapons.
They're not expecting it. They're expecting a sword or a magic net or something.
I suppose that's one
or
the
your
thing
own hand.
I suppose that's one of the things that makes it a little bit like this could be a much more grotesque and upsetting. Stop thinking about wanking yourself to death.
Thinking about Peter Pettigrew wanking himself to death.
It's very different.
This would be a much more grotesque and scary story if they had like knives and swords and guns.
Yeah.
Rather than like zapping people with magic spells. Like, it's already quite tense and dark, this book especially, I think. And, you know, if they were, like, if there was a lot of stabbing, that would be pretty scary.
Yeah. My nephew, who is 10, the other day said to me, I hate Harry Potter. I hate it. And I said, oh, why do you hate it? And he said, because everything always turns out well. So I assume he hasn't got to this stage of the book.
No, he has not read past book 4.
Yes.
Book 4 is like, all right, these are children's books, right? Ha 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 ha, just kidding. Yeah.
There is an intense amount of trauma.
Book 4, children die too.
Yeah.
Even the stuff that they win in the latter half of the series, it leaves awful scars on their souls and bodies.
Well, yeah. Dumbledore dies because it doesn't.
Loads of people die.
Quite a few. Peter Pettigrew wanks himself to death. It's ridiculous.
At least he died doing something he loved.
So Harry and Ron then drop their wands. Draco picks them up at Bellatrix's order. And Harry can feel the pain, and he knows that this pain is Voldemort flying back to where he can be close enough to apparate. This raises the question, what is the apparition distance? I really want to know. I'm very curious.
I think that will vary with wizards.
Ooh, yeah. Better wizards can do it from farther away.
I feel like Ron could do about 3 feet.
And he'd probably like leave his own feet behind or something.
Yeah, he'd splinch them off. So at this point, a chandelier breaks.
Of course. How very Meatloaf.
The scene gets very hectic. Harry steals the wands that are dropped, and he does a triple stupefy on Greyback because he has 3 wands. And I just like to imagine that he put one between each of the wedges of his fingers and had it like Wolverine and pointed them all at Greyback when he does the stupefy.
Is that a thing that's happened before, that like if you have 3 wands, it's 3 times as good?
This is the first time I've seen it.
Why don't they all have loads of wands then? Why do they only ever the have one and then they can lose it?
If I was a wizard, I'd just have like one strapped to my body like a porcupine.
I've got like 7 pens in my bag that I've stolen.
You would want like an Edward Scissorhands of wands.
Exactly, right?
Or Freddy Krueger of wands.
Or like a 10-color ballpoint of wands.
Oh, yeah.
Or just like a spare wand, a travel folding wand.
Ooh, carry like a tree ring with you, if it's by like cross-sectional area as opposed to number.
Even if there's all this shit about you go to Ollivander's shop and he's like, well,
the wand chooses the wizard.
But like the wands work for the other wizards, as is evidenced in this book. So why not have a few spares for disarmament situations?
Yeah, I'm surprised there's not a Death Eater. Like, even if that's not normal to do, you want like one General Grievous Death Eater that murders people and then takes their wands and then is like, oh yeah, that's Bill. He's got 38 wands from all the people that he's murdered.
I also don't understand with the Uber wand, the Death Stick. How does anyone ever defeat it? I thought the point of that wand was that it couldn't be defeated. So how does anyone ever get it?
With death, Martin.
A lot of the deaths that are at least described are sneaky deaths. Right. I think it can't be defeated in a duel. So then you have to kill the other person like unsuspectingly.
Yeah. Like ambush them or take it when they're asleep.
Mm-hmm. So the chandelier breaks. The scene gets very hectic and Harry is able to steal these wands. He does the triple stupefy. Then Narcissa and Bellatrix realize that it's Dobby and they start talking shit. And at the exact point that Dobby came in here, right away I was like, oh, this dude's not getting out of here alive. Like, he's not surviving this fight. So they start talking smack. They're like, oh, what? You dirty little monkey. How dare you take a witch's wand? How dare you defy your masters? And then Dobby hits him with a pretty good line where he goes, Dobby has no master. Dobby is a free elf. And Dobby has come to save Harry Potter and his friends. Which is pretty good. Then Harry throws a wand to Ron so that he can disapparate with Hermione. Harry then grabs Grip Hook and Dobby and starts to disapparate to Bill and Fleur's place. But while they are disapparating, Bellatrix throws a knife in their direction. And like the last thing that Harry sees before they spin away and start to disapparate is this knife hurling straight at them. So they go through the disapparation process. They land in the area where they see a cottage, and Harry's asking Dobby if this is the right place or if they got sent somewhere else. But during the disapparation thing, there's this really like intimate moment where Harry is holding Dobby's hand and he feels Dobby pull it as if he is steering them in the right direction. And Harry gives him like a hand squeeze to say like, yeah, you got this. Mm. It's this really like touching moment. And then they get to the location. Harry asks, are we in the right spot? And then he realizes that Dobby has the knife stuck in his chest and he's bleeding pretty profusely. And it's not looking great for Dobby. He's about to die. Like, he's not salvageable. It's not going to work. But Harry is yelling for the people that he sees outside of this cottage. And he doesn't know if it's Bill and Fleur or evil people or some random muggles. He doesn't care. He's screaming for people to help him. Yeah. And Dobby, as the life leaves his body and his eyes go dull, he looks at Harry and just says, Harry, Potter. And then that's the end of chapter 23.
Oh.
Poor Dobby.
Do you think Bellatrix would have thrown that knife, though? Because the orders are no one is to kill Harry but Voldemort.
Oh.
And what if, because they're all moving very quickly, she hit the wrong one? Maybe she doesn't give a shit. Maybe she's like, no one tells me who not to kill.
I did find this scene really confusing. I had to visit like two or three times because I was like, were like Ron and Hermione...
They operated separately.
But it doesn't say that until...
So it doesn't say it, which I think is like to make you be suspenseful because Harry just gives him a wand to say like, this is what you're supposed to do. So I guess part of the suspense is like, did they actually do it? Like, you don't know.
I just found that confusing.
I did as well.
Also because you're supposed
Come on, J.K. Rowling.
You're supposed to be focused on Harry and maybe everything is too busy for him to even notice whether Ron and Hermione have successfully operated because he just like, Ron, take the wand and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, I agree, Martin. I had to read this a couple times. I was audiobooking it and Kelly, my girlfriend, was with me while I was listening to it. She was doing this because what I didn't realize, she was secretly filming me on her phone to see if I would have like a big reaction to it. But I just like don't react very, very much to at least like an audiobook, like maybe a movie. I'll like tear up and choke up. But the biggest reaction I had is that like once Dobby came back and broke the chandeliers, like my eyes bulged out real big, like, oh shit, nice. And then for the rest of it, I just like didn't react. But I did have to
inside.
I was sad inside. I just didn't like show it, which is what Kelly was looking for.
Aww.
But I did like a couple times. I had to ask her like, wait. Did Hermione and Ron go with them? Mm. Why didn't? What's going on?
So. Well, there's so much business in this chapter, isn't
there? Exactly. Super hectic.
In the outdoors, and then they're upstairs in the manor, and then they're downstairs in the manor, then they're back upstairs again, and then they're apparating.
Mm-hmm. Then a chandelier
explodes.
It's
a busy chapter.
Yeah, a lot happens.
Yeah, chandeliers, knives, hand strangle. A lot of shit.
Well, speaking of a lot of shit, let's
hold it right there. Hey, editing Mike again. So good to see you. It's been so long. And end this episode of Potterless here for now. Sorry, Helen just talked way too much about masturbating to death that the episode got so long. If you want to hear more of Helen, you can check out her podcast, The Illusionist, and find her on Twitter at Helen Zaltzman. And if you want to hear more of Martin, you can find his podcast, Song by Song, and find him on Twitter at Martin Austwick. Huge shout out to them for being on the show despite their jet lag. It was so much fun. This is easily one of the funniest episodes of Potterless, and I'm very excited for their future appearance on the next episode of Potterless. And listeners, thank you so much for listening, and until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, before they masturbate themselves to death, wizard on! If you are in the need of busting out some new t-shirts now that it's spring and t-shirt weather, why don't you go to the Potterless merch store? If you go to bit.ly/merchon, you can check out all of the Potterless merchandise. We have house color shirts with the Potterless logo. We've got Ludo Bagman shirts, pins, posters, all sorts of fun stuff. And you can check it all out at bit.ly/merchon. Potterless is created by Mick Schubert. It is hosted by Mick Schubert. It is edited by Mick Schubert. It is produced by Mick Schubert, as well as Leanne Davis, Vicky Garcia, Aaron Johnson, Jesse Horgan, Natalie Klobuchar, Deborah Wilkins, Klaus Zerlobu, Rebecca Adamick, Frank Chiodo, Marchismo, Tori Larsick, Samantha Rose, Juan Sanfilio, Jenna Dowsett, Kieran Webb, Abid Med, Caitlin Jordan Pontolo, Rosemary Dodge, Jill Belay, Marie Lisa C. Keen, Ariel Bird, Romina Rivadeneer, Camille Dock, Russell Dunk, Dustin Mullen-Couge, Audra, Eleanor Curlin, Sydney Cawthorn, Billy Hinton, Rossanne Batamana, Andrea Franz, Nikita Power, Lala Palmer, Chelsea Green, Taylor Armstead, Lovekesh Longer, Ali Madsen, Cassandra Aponte, Roxy Chaos, Amelia Kraus, Sean Montag, Sarah Nink, Ben Silver, Rachel Guthrie, Zachary Polito, Jessica Ann Arnica, the daughter, Tiago Costa, Daisy Cartensutter, Jessica Jacob, Orchid Grower, Steve Treloar, Vivian the Owl, Takari Arant, Haley Hastings, Marino, Mostert, Pinkie Pan, Angelina Withrid, Rosemary Heise, Lee Ganji Singh, Alex Bisholta, Brian Williams, Caitlin Sullivan, Finn Stuckey, Mohsin Siddiqui, Grace Riggle, Sammy Shaw, Raul Pineda, Ingen Hodstadter, Mari Wynn, Brianne Wingate, Alexandra Consilver, John Cocker, Jenna Juice, Noel Basilet, Tao, Emily Tyrell, Michael Russell, Robin Fernandez, Patricio Colon, Will Barrington, Liz Bigelow, Mariah Noah, Brendan Pickens, Sarah Enslin, Claire Spencer, Teal, Sina Schutzeberg, Rory Collier, Glory Gillum, Sarah, and Patrick Donovan, AliCat29, Hallie Bowen, Veronica Bartova, Kevin Harnoy, Lotta B, Noah, Tracy Toya, Lucinda, Carlos Nino, Pam Webb, Nikki Amio, Colleen King, Jennifer Marklew, Freddie J. Svedson, Ivor Peterson, Naomi Guglielmo, Tyler Latshaw, Summer Rathel, Heather Fleischman, Vera Cullifin, Carrie D. Bagson, Andrea Kroc, Elisa Grieven, Lynn Walker, Emily Gale, Ryan King, Cameron Watkins, Justin Montero, Christine Saunders, Jacob Parrish, Toothless Walnut, Weekend at Dead Cat Ladies, Maya Gray, Mark Boddy, Polly Burge, Kimberly Savage, Srujan Thanmegupta, Brittany Gutierrez, Nita Atabani, Bhavi Patel, Tumnus Moran, Remy Fontaine, Mats Furley, Sarah Shecker, Lauren Cook, Nova VM, Kyle, Zena Rosnowski, Emily Tilly, Colleen Mage, Harlan Haskins, Akanksha Saxena, Wouter Vander Maiden, Shelby Darnell, Noelia, Reese Clark, Adriana Cox, Brian, Yuka Mipeats Waffles, Washin Large, Jenny Campione, Nikki Harris, Kara Hamilton, Dorcas, Courtney Hemwood, Kine Roan, Amanda Alfred, Sabrina, Lauren Cook, Claire Challoner, Alicia McLaren, Kafir Shaltiel, Lindy Packy, Martha Madueno, Benjamin Desmond, Tahinder Cumber, Skymart 6, and Can't I Potter? Web designed by Kelly Beckman, and the music is by Bettina Campomanes. If you want to find us on social media, you can go to facebook.com/potterless, twitter.com/potterlesspod, Instagram. instagram.com/potterlesspodcast or reddit.com/r/potterless. For any and all information about the show, you can head on over to potterlesspodcast.com. And if you want bonus content, go to patreon.com/potterless. Thank you so much for listening. And as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, wizard on!
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.